Anam. Gabriella.
Yes, come on. I'm going to go ahead and mute because I've got dough on my
board.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and mute, and then once I can leave it, I'll come back to the computer room. But if he's waiting for more than one, you can tell him that I'm muted.
Okay, all right. I'm in here, Bobo.
Mocha.
Hi.
Hello.
He's not on yet. He's not on yet.
Hi, thanks. All right. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Anna's on, but she's muted.
Okay, thank you. Today is a Jewish history class.
I'm going to mute.
Okay. It's an unusual Jewish history class because I do have a handout. It's a very short handout, and then we will go into our normal Jewish history classes. The handout is available on the Marie's landing page, which you can find on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix in row 14, the second column from the left. When the landing page opens up, scroll down to Yom Yerushalayim. And there's a essay or an article by Rabbi Cook on the subject of Yom Yerushalayim. We will start with the L'shem Yehud. It's a very short article. L'shem Yehud kud shabrihu ishkinte vidhilu urhimu udhilu udhilu urhimu. Le'akta l'shem yudhe bavavhe. V'yehuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah. La'asok Torah mitzvah. Vayihino am Adonai Eloheinu aleinu ma'asei yadeinu kananei aleinu ma'asei yadeinu kananeihu. Jerusalem Day, the two messengers, the writings of Rabbi Cook. Just a quick, brief review about Rabbi Cook. He was the first Ashkenazi rabbi in Israel, in the land of the modern state, before it was a modern state. He actually authorized the formation of Rabbi Ashlag's yeshiva in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv. I believe he did that in 1922. That eventually became the Kabbalah Center under the auspices of Rabbi Berg. This essay about Jerusalem Day was written by Rav Cook before the unification of Jerusalem, before there was a Jerusalem Day. So it is his students of today that are connecting the two ideas, the Yom Yerushalayim and Rabbi Cook's commentary on these two messengers, as we will read what he actually said. The Temple of Herod. The prophet Isaiah used the metaphor of two messengers, the herald of Zion and the herald of Jerusalem, who together proclaim the imminent redemption of Israel. This is obviously connecting to the concept of the Mashiach. Al har gaboa ali lach mevaseret zion harimi bekoach koleh mevaseret Yerushalayim harimi al tirai imri leare Yehuda hine Eloheihem. Herald of Zion, ascend a lofty mountain. Herald of Jerusalem, lift up your voice with strength. Be not afraid. This is a translation, supposedly, of Isaiah 40, chapter 40, verse 9. The problem is, if you read the Hebrew, the third word from the end is Yehuda, and the fourth word is Le'ari, Arei, which means the city of Yehuda, and that's not what is being translated here, although Jerusalem can be considered the city of Yehuda. Who are these two messengers? Why was one commanded to scale the mountain, while the second messenger was instructed to raise her voice? We must first analyze the difference between the names Zion and Jerusalem. I am adding, my understanding of the word Zion from the Zohar is the spiritual point that is the entry point for the Shefa flow into the physical world. This point connects to the Holy of Holies in the physical world. Rabbi Cook, below, is defining the modern usage of the terms as he understands them. Zion represents our national aspirations for autonomy and independence, while Jerusalem symbolizes our lofty visions for holiness and spiritual greatness. The herald of Zion is none other than the Zionist movement, demanding the restoration of independence and sovereignty for the Jewish people in their own land. This call is heard clearly around the world. There is no need to further raise its voice. However, secular Zionism is only concerned with our legitimate rights to self-rule. Its aspirations are the same as those of every other nation. The Herald of Jerusalem, on the other hand, speaks of our return to holiness, so that we may fulfill our national destiny as a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. This messenger of redemption calls for the restoration of Jerusalem, our holy city, and the holy temple. Unlike the herald of Zion, she stands on a high mountain. Her vision comes from a high and lofty standpoint. But her voice is faint, and her demand is not heard clearly. The herald of Jerusalem seems to fear raising her voice too loudly. And this is an unwritten commentary. That is like the children of Israel, but more specifically the Jewish people, throughout the centuries, who have been part of a slave-like mentality, a servant-like mentality, being under the thumb of other nations and afraid to speak the words directly or clearly. Continuing to read. The prophet found fault with both messengers. He reproved the herald of Zion, "Why are you standing down below, together with all the other nations? Why do you only speak of the commonplace goals of the Gentile nations? Ascend a lofty mountain. Speak in the name of Hashem, in the name of Israel's holy mission, in the name of the prophetic visions of redemption, the Jewish people, and all of humanity." My unwritten commentary. Rise up on the mountain is an implication that you need to elevate your consciousness. Excuse me. We need to elevate our consciousness so that we are clear that, yes, we want something similar to the other nations, which is our own nation, but that nation needs to be connected to the goal of being a priest of nation, a nation of priests. That individual country needs to be a Torah-based law. It needs to be a country built on the Torah. Continuing to read. The prophet then turned to the herald of Jerusalem. You who call for the return to the city of holiness, you are speaking from the right place, demanding our lofty ideals. But your voice is not heard. You need to learn from the herald of Zion and lift up your voice in strength and be not afraid. My unwritten commentary, you need to wake up from the past, from being under the thumb of the other nations. Yes, they are more numerous, but the number, size of the nation is not going to be the winning side. The winning side is those who are with Hashem. Recognize that and do not fear. If you are attacked, if you are put to death, God forbid, if you are expressing your yearning, what is in your heart, trust that Hashem will protect you. My written commentary. Yom Yerushalayim is connecting to a physical historic event of the reunification of Jerusalem under the authority of the modern state of Israel. The spiritual connection is much broader than this. Jerusalem is the home of Hashem in the physical world. This is the temple when it is rebuilt. It will also be the home of Mashiach. Mashiach is king of all mankind, as is stated in different ways in the books of prophets. Thus, Jerusalem is a city that belongs to all mankind. This is my opinion. That's the completion of this part of the class. We will now move to the idea of the parasha of the week, which is learning with the times, living with the times, that of parasha Bamidbar. And Bamidbar has two very distinct ideas, and we can learn from both of them. But we don't have the time to learn from both of them today. The two ideas are the idea of a census, but not really the census, the idea of counting the size of the tribes in physical numbers of soldiers. That's one idea. The other idea is the idea of astrological influences. Both of them are long and involved subjects. So I'm going to pick the first one, that of the counting, that of the census. And I'm going to read some of the verses. Starting with the first verse, I'm going to ask questions. I'm not going to answer a lot of the questions. But feel free after the class or during the class to raise the question, what is it you want to know from these questions? Verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tent of meeting, on the first day of the second month, in the second year after they came out of the land of Egypt, saying, why did we need to learn that it was speaking in the tent of meeting, why do we need to learn that it was the Rosh Chodesh of Iyar? But in the second year, having come out of Egypt, we left in Nisan. So this is 11 months later. We left in Nisan, and 50 days later, we received the Torah. And then we traveled. And while we traveled in the desert, we had built the golden calf. We knew that we were going to wander for years. So why does it matter that it was the second day, first day of the second month, the Rosh Chodesh of Iyar? Verse 2. Take the sum of all of the congregation of the children of Israel, by their families, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, every male by their poles. This translation is a little bit difficult to understand. Well, if you need to count the people, we have, the Torah has given us, and by this time people would have been taught, the Torah has given us a technique to count people so that they are not limited by the counting. But why do we need to expand it to be only the males? By their father's house, by their families. What is the difference between the father's house and the family? And what does it mean by their poles? And it's spelled in this English, P-O-L-L-S, but it may be P-O-L-E. Verse 3. From 20 years old and upward, all that are able to go forth to war are in Israel. You shall number them by their hosts, even you and Aaron. We've learned the Ari's understanding of the word host as being a congregation of angels, who then became the army of Israel. And you there shall be a man of every tribe, every one head of his father's house. And these are the names of the men that shall stand with you, of Reuben, Eliezer, the son of Shedeur. From verse 6 through 10, it's essentially giving us the names of the leaders of the tribes, the Nasiim. And this continues from 11 through 14, through 16. Verse 17. And Moses and Aaron took these men that are pointed out by name. The leaders of the tribe in this, they're not the names used in the Parasha of Naso, which is next week. They're different names, but they're the same men, according to the Midrash, according to our understanding. So why were they pointed out? Because they are the leaders of each tribe. And so they went with Moses and Aaron. So there was a three men who went and recorded all of the people, all the males who were between the age of 20 and 60. And we've read the Ari's explanation of where the hint in the Torah is of what they actually did, how they approached it, so that they did not limit the people with their census, with their counting. 20. And the children of Reuben, Israel's firstborn, their generations by their families, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, by their poles, every male from 20 years old and upward, all that were able to go forth to war. Those that were numbered of them, of the tribe of Reuben, were 46,500. I'm not going to read you all the different numbers that are associated in this parasha. The English or the Latin, the Greek name of this book of the Torah, we call it Bamidbar, which means in the desert. But the English translation of the Greek and the Latin is Numbers. Why? Because the portion starts out with the numbers of the people that were ready to go to war. But again, I ask the question, why do you and I have to know that there were 46,500 members of the tribe of Reuben? And there, each of the tribes have a different number. They're not equal in size. And each of them, why do we have to know that is a question that needs to be answered. When this question was asked of Rabbi Berg, his answer was, that's the number of stars in the astrological sign associated with Reuben. It may be that if we add up all those numbers and relate them as a portion of the size of a circle, we will be defining the actual size of each astrological sign in its the circumference of the circle. That may be what it would be if we calculated it. I have not done that calculation. We have a tradition that teaches that the total is 603,000 plus. And the Torah says it specifically. And we have to ask, I could add up all these different numbers. Why does the Torah need to tell me those numbers? Why does the Torah need to add those numbers up? It's using letters, and we have a tradition that teaches, don't waste the letters in the Torah. If I could calculate it on my own, I would. And in this case, I can. So what am I supposed to learn from the Torah telling me that the total of the members of the tribe is 603,000 plus? These are difficult questions to answer. They've been pondered by sages, by brilliant, wise people. And I am not one of those people. I am asking the same questions because that's what occurs to me. But it doesn't mean that I really know the answer. As I said, the Kabbalist Rabbi Berg said that the numbers that are associated with each tribe, as in the case of Reuben, 46,500, is dealing with astrological influence. And we have a tradition that the total that is read in the Torah, let me find it. It's verse 46. All those that were numbered were 603,550. But verse 47 says, but the Levites, after the tribe of their fathers, were not numbered among them. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, in verse 49, only the tribe of Levi you shall not number, nor shall you take the sum of them among the children of Israel. But appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony and over all of its furniture and over all that belongs to it. They shall carry the tabernacle and all of its furniture, and they shall minister to it, and shall camp around about the tabernacle. And when the tabernacle is to go forward, the Levites shall take it down, and when the tabernacle is to be pitched, the Levites shall set it up. And the common man that comes near shall be put to death. These verses are talking about levels of holiness. And if you're not cleansed enough, sometimes that level of holiness, that energy is too much and it will kill you, God forbid. What is the real meaning of these numbers? Rabbi Berg is correct, but it's not an exact number. There are more than 46,500 stars in the astrological sign associated with the tribe of Reuben. Maybe it's the number of habitable planets. There are many different approaches to this number. But let's just take one example. The tribe of Reuben has 46,500. And if I put the number 46,500 into the gematria calculator, there are no records that large, of course. So let's change it to be 465. By the way, this reminds me, yesterday we spoke about 6 times 27. And I said it was a number, and that number was incorrect. The actual calculation was 162, not 142, as I said. And that will change the discussion, but I don't want to go into it right now. There are words in the Torah that connect to 465. The first one we meet is in Genesis chapter 24, verse 58. And the word is ha-telachi. And it's being translated here as go, but that's not the real meaning of the word. If you take a look at the word, it's spelled hey, ta, lamed, ta, yud. It can be rearranged and substituted along these following lines. The hey at the beginning is the taf, and the lamed and the yud together have a gematria of 40, which is a mem. So we have the word, or the letters of hey, kaf, tam. Tam means complete. As the Torah tells us, Jacob was an ish tam. Tam means complete. Tam has other connotations as well. But hey, kaf, tam would be translated as like the complete, like the complete person. Another word with this gematria is in Genesis chapter 45, verse 7. Willa ha chayot. Chayot means a living animal. Hamzuzot has a gematria of 465. When it's not spelled completely, like it's not spelled that way in the V'ahavtap paragraph of the Shema. It's spelled without that final vav. What is the mezuzah? Well, it can be the door frame, but it can also be the mezuzah that we put on the door frame. It can be the scroll with the Shema written on it, put into a house that is attached to the door frame. It is a mystical item that protects. One of the aspects of Reuben being the firstborn is to protect. Exodus chapter 23, verse 19 has a word with a gematria of 465. Ad matach. Which translates as the female form of the man Adam. Or that can be all of human mankind. But in the female form. It can be the land, which is a euphemism for the land of Israel. Akliyat, Exodus 29:13, are the kidneys, the plural of kidney. What is the purpose of the kidneys? They purify the blood. The blood is where the soul lives. They're purifying the soul. This can be done for each and every number that comes from the Torah that's associated with the tribes. It relates to the astrological influences. it helps us understand what those influences are. It would take an extensive amount of preparation to teach this material as it should be taught. That's not my role as of yet. It's not my role to teach the particulars. My role is to teach the general. Generally speaking, that's what I teach. Do you understand the difference between the general and the particular? We live in an amazing universe. A universe that is the same for the individual as it is for the quantum. The micro and the macro are the same. I teach the macro, the general. But we have to dig into the macro, drill down into the macro, to the specific, to the particular, and prove to ourselves how the particular, the individual, is the same as the macro. I still have some time left, because I didn't go through each of the numbers. But the second issue that I said I would not discuss is the astrological influences. Why do I need to know what the flag of the tribe of Reuben looked like? Why do I need to know why the flag marched in the order of the supernal zodiac? The answer is just there, right there in that question. The way the tribes marched in the desert is the way the zodiac marches, the way the zodiac cycles. It's teaching the cycle of the macro involvement of the universe. That is what is taught in Parashat Bamidbar. We need to know how the tribes marched in the desert to confirm that what Abraham teaches in the Sefer Yetzirah is also true. Does anyone have any questions? There will come a time when I will teach the particulars, but it is not yet.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure how it. You mentioned that the blood is where the soul is.
Yes, the Torah says that the nefesh is in the blood.
The nefesh is in the blood.
The nefesh is the lowest level of the soul. And
right.
In the blood you have red corpuscles and white. You have what do we call it?
The medium? Plasma?
No, not so much the plasma, but the white cells. The defense mechanisms against the negative viruses.
Right.
I'm looking for the word that describes the system that keeps the body safe, that flows through all parts of the body through the blood.
Antibodies.
Well, no, the antibody is part of it, but it's the...
I don't know the word.
It'll come to me. But the essence of why I said, not that I said, it's what the Torah says, that the soul is in the blood and the immune system is in the blood. And the blood is composed of red and white. Actually, it's only red when there's oxygen in it. But the red and white represents, from the Zohar, the left column and the right column of the Tree of Life. The blood represents the Tree of Life because everything is there. It flows throughout the body.
So when you're spilling blood, it's... Well, that's just very interesting. I'll take it from there.
When you're spilling blood, you're
killing a person's soul.
No, the soul does never die. It's immortal. But you're killing a person's body. When you spill the blood, you're taking the life force, which is the soul, out of the body, separating between the two. The soul is immortal, but the body is not.
You're killing them. Right, but in this manifestation, I mean, it has to transform after you spill the blood.
It's a code word for the idea of killing the person.
Right.
There is much to contemplate in your question.
Yes.
Are there any other questions? There is a tremendous amount of information in the book of Bamidbar, the book of Numbers. The information that's there is helpful to understand in a structure of the Sefirot. There are five books of Moses. Genesis is the Keter. Exodus is Chokhmah. Leviticus is Numbers. Bamidbar is Zerantin. It's the male energy, the sharing energy. Devarim is Malchut, the female energy, the receiving energy. When we understand Bamidbar is Zerunpin, we can relate Zerunpin to space, to the astrological signs, all of these things that are built into the first parasha, but also throughout the stories of Bamidbar. This is a class on Jewish history. When did Jewish history start? It started with the creation of the desire to receive. When were the stars and astrological signs created? further down the process after the creation of the endless world. Are there any other questions? Have a beautiful afternoon. We have two classes tonight. One at 4:30 is our Deeper Zohar class. We're in section 10 of Parashat Vayera. And at 7 o'clock class will be questions and answers. These are general questions or specific questions that you might have. If I can answer them, I will. Shalom Gadol to all.
Thank you for the class.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Thank you.